Hey, ghoul friend. It's me, Adrian, or Aiden. Either way, I want to ask you to wish Susto a happy birthday. As we celebrate the upcoming 5th anniversary of Susto and its dedication to exploring the rich tapestry of Latin American and Hispanic folklore, I invite you to join me in taking this paranormal project to the next level. Over the past 5 years, I've delved deep into the mysterious realms of ghostly apparitions, supernatural legends, and chilling tales that have captivated audiences worldwide. Now, as I embark on the next chapter of this journey into the unknown, I need your support to enhance your experience as a listener. Your generous donation will allow me to invest in a new recording setup, ensuring that future spine-chilling narratives are captured with crystal ball clarity and devilish detail. With upgraded equipment, I'll be able to host ghoulish guests with greater ease and transport you even deeper into the heart of darkness, where legends come alive and the paranormal awaits. Every dollar contributed will aid in advancing the quality of Susto, enabling me to continue preserving and sharing the enchanting folklore of Latin American and Hispanic cultures with the world. Join me in celebrating 5 years of fear-inducing tales and help me amplify this spooky saga for many more to come. Together, we can unlock the secrets of the supernatural and keep the spirit of storytelling alive. To make a donation, you can visit gofund.me/10bcdc27. Thank you for your support, and may the spirits guide you on your journey through the unknown. Eternally yours, Adrian or Aiden. Either way. Hey, ghoul friends, it's me, Adrian, or Aiden. Either way, you are still listening to Susto, the podcast of ooky, spooky, scary stories. Welcome back. Thank you so much for being here, for returning from the grave, from the beyond. And if this is your first time, welcome. You know, join the ritual, the seance, what have you, the summoning circle. Thank you so much for being here. Right off the bat, I don't know about you. No, I'm not feeling 22, but I am feeling still very excited about the last episode. I'm still reeling and recovering from that interview with Isabel Cañas, who, if you don't know, is the author of The Hacienda and Vampires of El Norte. If you have not read those books, what are you doing? Please go check them out. They're so good. Isabel was a phenomenal guest on Susto. I knew that we were going to hit it off, that we were going to get along, that we were going to have so much fun just from reading her books and reading her author's notes and all that fun stuff. And I was right. What else is new, right? But yeah, I had so much fun. If you haven't listened to that episode, I highly, highly recommend that you go and give it a listen when you get a chance, because it was just so much fun. And I still smile thinking about it. And if you are a best ghoul friend on Patreon, then you had access to the video version of that interview. And we did some bonus content after the interview. That again is a best ghoul friend exclusive on patreon.com/sustopodcast. With that being said, I do have a couple of updates. There are a few things that are in the air that are not our traditional updates on the show. So I really want you all to hear these out for me. And if you would be so kind and generous and supportive as to help me out here. I always say that the best way and the easiest way to support the show is by interacting with it online and sharing it amongst your network of ghouls. And now I have something that is also very easy to do. The Austin Chronicle has started their nomination rounds for the 2024 Best of Austin. You may have remembered that last year, Susto received enough nominations to make it to the final voting round. And thank you all so much. That was amazing. It was my first time throwing my hat in the ring for that one, and I made it to the finals. So this year, let's see what we can do. You know, maybe with your help, Susto will be voted the best podcast in the Best of Austin this year. And it's very easy to do that. There is a link in my link tree. So it's in the bio of my Instagram, Twitter, and I will put it on the website, sustopodcast.com. But if you can, grab your phone right now, wherever you're listening to this, or if you're on your computer, you're going to visit vote.com. www.austinchronicle.com, and then you're going to scroll down and select Politics and Media. And then when that opens up, you scroll down and select Podcast. And from there, you just type in Susto and hit vote. It may ask you to register. Every nomination counts. The nomination round ends April 8th. And it's my understanding from what I've seen online from other people, you do not have to be an Austin resident to vote. So with that being said, this is easy and free to do to support Susto, to get the word of Susto out there. I would greatly appreciate everybody's support. And also just voting in all of the categories for the Best of Austin, it's really fun because this informs, you know, people what they can check out here all around Austin, not only the winners, but also the finalists. So again, this is the nomination round, which ends April 8th, and then there will be a final voting round after that if and when Susto makes it. We're manifesting here when Susto makes it to the final round again this year. And then we'll see what happens from there, right? Thank you in advance for voting. Again, it's vote.austinchronicle.com. It's super fast and easy. The next thing is a reminder that we have the Curious Twins Paranormal Psychic and Spirit Festival that is going to be at the Victoria's Black Swan Inn in San Antonio. Again, that's May 18th, and there is an option to do the VIP psychic investigation Friday, May 17th, the evening before, which I will be at. But the main thing or the main component for the fest is the 18th. It's, from what I'm seeing, like an all-day event from 4 to 11, and I will be there tabling, selling some goodies, meeting people, saying hi. You know, I love these in-person events because I get a chance to meet you all and to talk to you. Not only that, but I have been invited to present this year, so I am very excited for that. More details will be coming soon, but you can visit curioustwins.com. And the Psychic and Spirit Fest will be there. That'll be so much fun. The tickets, a standard ticket, general admission is $40, $10 for youth ages 8 to 18. The VIP ticket, which includes entry to the main event on 18th and the investigation, and an event t-shirt is $70. So again, you can go to their website, curioustwins.com, and check out your options there. One final main thing that I want to ask you all's help for. You heard this in the pre-roll of this episode. Susto is actually turning 5 years on April 17th. I posted a video on TikTok, and I'm going to try not to talk too much about it because I get emotional every time, but I can't help it because it's amazing. I feel so proud and accomplished with what we have been able to do with Susto in what feels simultaneously like a very short amount of time, but also a very long time. It feels like I've been doing this show for 20 years, but we've only been doing it for 5, and we've been able to do so much. And I'm just like, I'm so baffled by that, almost speechless, which is hard to leave a podcaster speechless, but here I am. But anyway, there, I have decided that in honor of Susto's 5-year anniversary, I want to try and take Susto to the next level. I've said this before, and I'm using it now. I have used the same quote introductory microphone for the last 5 years. The very first episode that I recorded this show was with this same microphone. It was like $100 microphone at the time that I bought it. And yeah, I'm ready to level up, and I'm ready to invest in what some would call professional equipment, which is an entire setup. It includes a professional sound mixing board, headphones, the accessories that come with that, and microphones. I really want to invest in 4 new microphones, again, with all the accessories. And I think that would really allow me to branch out on what I can do with Susto, with the kinds of guests that I can have on and what I can do with those guests, especially in person. So I'm asking for everybody's support to help me with that. It is a steep price tag, but that's why I'm asking. I, for a while, have been thinking about this. I almost didn't want to ask, and I was like, you know what, it's just going to take me a long time, but I'm going to find a way to save up for it. But I was encouraged by friends and family to just go for it. And constantly, you all are always showing me support, and I can never thank you enough for that. Again, I want us to take this to the next realm, the next plane of existence, if you will. So if you would like to make a donation or learn more about this campaign, you can visit gofund.me/10 BCDC27. And again, that link is on the link tree, which is on the socials, and I'm going to toss it up on the website so you can find everything. If you're following on social media at Susto Podcast on every platform, you should be able to find all of this information. Again, thank you so much for all of your support. I'm going to leave it there. That was a lot to start the episode with, but I just wanted to push it all out there before we get started. And again, if you're following on social media, you will see it being posted on there. And I said this in the TikTok video, as much as I am a team of one, it takes a village, and you all are part of that village of the damned. So again, nominate Susto for Austin Chronicles 2024 Best of Austin. I'll see you at the Sidekick and Spirit Fest in San Antonio, May 17th. And if you would like to support Susto in ascending to the next realm by investing in your equipment, go visit the GoFundMe. With all of that being said, oof, what a mouthful. Thank you for sticking with me. I truly appreciate it. But we're back to a storytelling episode. And today, I will be telling you the story of the Basilisco Chilote. The Chiloé Archipelago lay quiet under the shroud of night, its dense forests filled with all sorts of wildlife, some farm animals, some wild, and others unknown. In a small, weather-beaten house nestled among the trees, Diego laid in bed, his mind drifting uneasily between dreams and reality. Diego was skeptical and dismissive of the old folktales that haunted the island. He brushed aside the warnings of the Basilisco Chilote, the legendary serpent with a rooster's head, as nothing more than superstition. But as the days passed, strange happenings plagued Diego's home. He could hear something sliding against the insides of his house. Shadows danced in the corners of his vision, and a sickly, oppressive feeling settled over him like a shroud. For weeks, his strength waned, his breath labored more each day, and his once vibrant spirit dimmed. Desperate for answers, Diego and his family turned to the local Machi, a wise shaman of the Mapuche people who knew the ways of the ancient spirits. But even the Machi's powerful incantations and herbal remedies failed to quell the malevolent force that gripped Diego's soul. One fateful night, Diego awoke to a chilling sensation creeping over him. His breath came in ragged gasps, and a cold sweat slicked his skin. As he blinked the sleepy confusion away, he could now make out the large shadow that loomed over him and what spilled over the edges of his bed. The Basilisco Chilote, a monstrous amalgamation of serpent and rooster, hunched over him, its beady, dead eyes locked in with Diego's as it fed upon his life force, sucking the very essence from his body. With a surge of terror-fueled adrenaline, Diego leaped from his bed and fled into the darkness. The creature's ghastly cries, which sounded like a baby's, echoed in his ears. The house seemed to twist and contort around him, the walls closing in with every step he took. Diego careened through the narrow corridors and cramped rooms, his heart pounding in his chest. But no matter how fast he ran, the Basilisco Chilote was on his heels, its giant, scaly form slithering through the darkness, slamming into the walls with loud thuds and bangs. As Diego reached the kitchen, he stumbled and fell hard to the floor, his body trembling with exhaustion, and then he felt it. The Basilisco Chilote's foul breath on his neck, its razor-sharp beak inches from his face. Diego lashed out with all his strength, grabbing a nearby candlestick and thrusting it towards the creature's gaping maw. With a deafening screech, the Basilisco Chilote recoiled, its bloodshot eyes narrowing in fury. But even as Diego fought for his life, the creature grasped him, constricting what little life was left in his body. He could feel the Basilisco's slimy tongue snaking its way into his mouth, tasting his very essence with every invasive slurp. The sensation was nauseating, revolting, and utterly horrifying. In a final, desperate bid for survival, Diego's mind raced back to the shaman's words. The only sure way to rid themselves of the Basilisco Chilote was to burn down the house where the monster was hatched. With a grim determination, he plunged the candlestick into the monster's eyes, its flame a beacon of hope in the suffocating darkness. As the Basilisco let out a wail, it dropped Diego. He staggered to his feet and hurled the candlestick towards the curtains of a nearby window. The flames caught hold with a roar, consuming everything in their path with ravenous hunger. As the inferno raged around him, Diego stumbled out into the cool embrace of the night. His lungs burned, filled with the acrid stench of smoke and ash and feathers. And as he collapsed into the dewy grass, gasping for breath and trembling with exhaustion, he heard the dying screech of the Basilisco Chilote and knew that he had finally vanquished the darkness that had haunted him for so long. Hey ghoul friend, it's me, Adrian or Aiden. Either way, it's that time of year. The True Crime and Paranormal Podcast Festival is right around the corner, so make sure that you get your tickets. You can visit truecrimepodcastfestival.com and use code SUSTO15 for 15% off your tickets. This year, the festival is in Denver, Colorado from July 12th through 14th, so if possible, I would love to see you there. I can't wait. And again, make sure to use code SUSTO15 for 15% off your tickets at truecrimepodcastfestival.com. Welcome back, cool friends. Okay, first, I need to just issue a formal apology because this story, it grossed me out when I was reading about it. This detail of this creature, whatever the creature is, feeding on the saliva of people to live. And so, I mean, but I knew, like, it made me uncomfortable. And I thought, okay, I have to put this in there because it made me cringe. So if I had to hear it, you have to hear it too. Sorry, not sorry. But let's go ahead and jump into a couple of links that I have here. So this main one that I had a lot of fun reading is from a blog called inthedarkair.wordpress.com. I don't think that they are posting anymore. Some of their most recent posts are from 2020, I believe. In the Dark Air, if you all are hearing this by any chance, love your blog, please keep going. But this link that I found about the Basilisco Chilote is so good. It was like the most comprehensive one, and so I'm gonna read through a couple parts of this. So this says, hailing from the Chiloé archipelago in southern Chile. So again, we're visiting Chile. We're visiting the land of El Trauco or El Huecufe. El Basilisco Chilote is a reptilian beastie from Chilote mythology that is sure to strike fear into the heart of any person. And this person is also funny the way that they write this blog, because right after that they said, or hunger, depending on how much you like fried chicken. I really enjoyed reading this blog entry. This continues, after all, at first glance, El Basilisco Chilote hardly looks intimidating. In fact, most artistic depictions of the beast imply that even it is a bit confused as to precisely what it is. So again, Basilisco is, I think it's a literal translation of the word basilisk. So if anyone's seen Harry Potter, you know the basilisk, right? This huge snake. And a basilisk is just a creature in mythology already. And we're going to cover that in a bit. But this one, the Basilisco Chilote, is part basilisk, so part, you know, snake, but it has the upper area, so like the chest up of it, if you will, is that of a rooster. So it's this weird, freaky combination. And there's different, again, like many of these stories, there's very different variations on what this creature actually looks like. So with this one, because basilisks typically are huge, they're big snakes, it's a big snake with the chest and head of a rooster. This continues, according to legend, it can only be hatched from an egg that has been laid and incubated by an old hen, an elderly hen, or a red rooster. I want you to remember that detail because that's going to come back later in this blog entry in a, really interesting way. But this says, once the egg has hatched, the creature will slither its way under the house of its unsuspecting prey, whereupon it will burrow deep into the ground and establish its underground lair. During the day, it hides in its snugly subterranean den and awaits for nightfall. Once it's dark, however, and the household has fallen into slumbering silence, El Basilisco Chilote will emerge to enact its deadly deeds. Also, I didn't include this in the story, but this says, in a reversal of its rooster heritage, El Basilisco Chilote emits a soothing song that lulls the people of the household to sleep. Which I think was a theme with El Trauco, right? Is that the Trauco serenades his victims. So there's this idea of music or song being used to disarm people so that they can be attacked, right? In these stories for that we're noticing from Chile. Or it just deepens their slumber. Which also reminds me of the Tlahuelpuchi, where instead of song though, it just uses like this mist that makes people stay asleep. It keeps them asleep or in a deep sleep. This continues, it is only then that it slides atop the chest of its victim, inhales their breath, sucks the phlegm from their mouth, and ingests their sputum. And for those of you who don't know what sputum is, like me, sputum is a mixture of saliva and mucus coughed up from the respiratory tract, typically as a result of infection or other disease, and often examined microscopically to aid medical diagnosis. That's from Google, and that's also fucking disgusting. I hate this detail so much. Ugh, just like this creature just literally just sucking your fluids out of you when you're asleep. Hate that. The blog says after 1 week, but I'm assuming it's not 1 week exactly. So just after some time of feeding on your bodily fluids, the victim of El Basilisco Chilote will start to notice a dryness in their mouth upon waking up, and their skin will become extremely pale. Over more time, an unexplainable fatigue will overwhelm them, and their appetite will vanish. They will rapidly start to lose muscle mass until they are a mere shell of their former selves. In the final stages, the victim will be plagued by a persistent cough, and their breathing will become labored. This is the point at which El Basilisco Chilote is extracting their final breaths, and it is only a matter of days before the poor unfortunate soul will die from dehydration. Once they are dead, El Basilisco Chilote will move on to another member of the household and repeat the process until all of the inhabitants have tragically perished. So that's the MO of a Basilisco Chilote is, again, it's this basilisk rooster creature. It feeds on people's bodily fluids, their saliva, their phlegm. It steals their breath. It makes you sick over time until you die. Which also reminds me of, is it El Pisadeira, where the sleep paralysis demon, which... where was that from? It's from Brazilian folklore. But with the pisadeira, it's a sleep paralysis demon that just continues to visit you basically until it kills you. So just this idea of consistency, right? Consistency is key with some of these creatures. So going into the origins of this, there's some on this same blog entry, but I want to bounce really quick to a Wikipedia entry on basilisks in general. And this says, in European bestiaries and legends, a basilisk, spelled with a K, is a legendary reptile reputed to be a serpent king who causes death to those who look into its eyes. So again, I mean, we're not fans of J.K. Rowling here. She's a transphobe. But just to reference Harry Potter, because I know it was so relevant in a lot of our lives, and maybe still is, but you know, yeah, that was a thing in what was it, the Chamber of Secrets, was like the basilisk was petrifying people. That comes from the mythology of the basilisk, which is not a detail with the Basilisco Chilote. I guess maybe because it has a rooster head, that takes away the petrifying quality. Although if you saw anything like that, I would just be petrified, scared, you know. But this continues, causes death to anyone who looks into its eyes. According to the Naturalis Historia of Pliny the Elder, the basilisk of Cyrene is a small snake, being not more than 12 inches in length, that is so venomous it leaves a wide trail of deadly venom in its wake, and its gaze is likewise lethal. So there is even a small version of it. According to Pliny, the basilisk's weakness is the odor of a weasel. The weasel was thrown into the basilisk's hole, recognizable because some of the surrounding shrubs and grass had been scorched by its presence. It is possible that the legend of the basilisk and its association with the weasel in Europe was inspired by accounts of certain species of Asiatic and African snakes, such as cobras, and their natural predator, the mongoose. Rikki Tikki Tavi, right? Anybody remember that? And the etymology of the word basilisk, it's the word originates from the Greek form basiliskos, Latin basiliscus, which means little king, little prince, chieftain, or young ruler, from two components. And it was also considered to be synonymous with cockatrice, which that word does also come up in the Dark Air blog. So let me bounce back to that before we move on to the cockatrice. This says, the myth of El Basilisco Chilote dates back to roughly the 16th century and is likely to have been heavily influenced by the arrival of Spanish conquistadores to the Chiloé archipelago. These conquistadores began their conquest of the islands in 1567, during which time their superstitious beliefs began to fuse with the myths of their indigenous Chono and Huiliche people. It was in this way that much of Chilote mythology was formed, since the Chiloé archipelago was isolated from the mainland of Chile. It was unaffected when the Mapuche people began occupying or destroying Spanish settlements in 1598, and thus the local people were able to preserve their unique culture. So again, this common theme that we're constantly seeing on Susto, right, is this idea of the influence of colonization on indigenous people's beliefs or their traditions or their stories or what have you. I'm very curious as to what the original form of this was before the influence of colonization of, and by that I mean the original version of the Basilisco Chilote, like before it turned into this. What was put together, right, to make this creature? And I want to say something comes up about that right here. It says, thus, El Basilisco Chilote is believed to be a combination of three mythical beasts, the basilisk we just talked about, and the cockatrice brought over from Europe by the Spanish conquistadores, and the colo-colo. So just to break it down, we've already talked about the basilisk. The cockatrice, again, is from Europe. And just a quick Wikipedia entry says, a cockatrice is a mythical beast, essentially a two-legged dragon or serpent-like creature with a rooster's head, described by Lawrence Bryner as an ornament in the drama and poetry of the Elizabethans. And it was featured prominently in English thought and myth for centuries. The origins are that the first English mention of the cockatrice was in the 14th century John Wycliffe translation of the Bible. The word was used for the translation of various Hebrew words. And some of its abilities are that the cockatrice has the reputed ability to kill people by either looking at them, the death-darting eye of cockatrice, touching them, or sometimes breathing on them. It was repeated in the late medieval bestiaries that the weasel, again, is the only animal that is immune to the glance of a cockatrice. And it was also thought that a cockatrice would die instantly upon hearing a rooster crow, which is interesting because it's part rooster, but I guess hearing a natural, if you will, rooster. According to legend, having a cockatrice look at itself in a mirror is one of the few surefire ways to kill it. So again, and this also reminds me of, like, of course, Medusa. How can we talk about this without bringing her up, right? Is this idea of that death glare. But with Medusa, it's very much like a petrifying glare, petrified to the point of stone with her, of course. So again, the Basilisco Chilote is a mix of that cockatrice, the basilisk, and the colo-colo. So to cover that part, the colo-colo is a villainous creature from Mapuche mythology. So this is where you get more or closer to like indigenous beliefs and indigenous mythology. So again, the Mapuche people, they had the colo-colo. And just to talk more about the colo-colo, this says, the colo-colo, by contrast, derives from the mythology of the Mapuche people who lived predominantly in south central Chile and southwestern Argentina. Its appearance varies depending on the region. This is what I was talking about earlier, how its appearance changes. But it is often depicted as either a feathered rat or a reptile with a rat's head. The rabid rodent was believed to hatch from an egg laid by a snake and incubated by a rooster. So the colo-colo, which is one of the components of the Basilisco Chilote, they're made in different ways. So colo-colo is, again, hatched by a snake and then incubated by a rooster, whereas the Basilisco Chilote is laid by either an elderly hen or a rooster. This continues, once it had hatched, the colo-colo would hide underneath a house and secretly feast on the saliva of the resident. So that's where the detail about feasting on the saliva comes into play, because I didn't really see that in the entries with the basilisk or the cockatrice, but with the colo-colo, that detail comes up. Unlike El Basilisco Chilote, however, the colo-colo could be exorcised from a home by a special Mapuche religious leader known as a machi, which is the like kind of like a our equivalent of a shaman. So this is where I think it has something interesting to say about society and people's biases or beliefs. So this kind of wraps up this blog entry by saying, it is commonly believed that legends such as Colo Colo and El Basilisco Chilote evolved out of the fact that locals had no explanation for the occurrence of various illnesses, so they were often blamed on supernatural forces. In particular, they served as a satisfactory explanation for consumptive diseases like cancer, leukemia, and chronic lung conditions, which religious healers throughout Chile were powerless to defend against during that time. So again, giving people this way to understand or process what they were going through. Again, it always comes back to trauma, at least when I'm talking about it, right? You all are probably like, can you get over it and stop being traumatized? No, because it's just very interesting that people are using, again, this, they're using supernaturalism to explain away what might be happening. But this continues. Another rather more bizarre explanation for the origins of these mythical beasts is related to their birth, as they were frequently described as the products of a male rooster or an elderly hen. These monsters may have been a physical representation of the psychological anxiety that local people had about, quote, abnormal sexual activity, such as intercourse between men or pregnancy in old age. And then this, I love whoever wrote this. It's so funny. They ended it by saying, in short, El Basilisco Chilote may be the most homophobic chicken you'll ever have the good fortune to never meet. And I do want to say one thing about that. If we have little ears listening, which I never really recommend the show for, you know, younger impressionable ears. But so for those who may not know me or may not know my past, I worked in a clinic setting for about 5 years, and I was doing HIV and STI, or sexually transmitted infections, testing and education. So I was testing community members and educating them about STIs and HIV and prevention and destigmatization, like everything that came with it. This really stood out to me, this idea of people attaching how this creature is brought to life by these, quote, taboo ways. And it's like a representation of how they might feel or think, right? Is they're opposed, I think is the word I'm trying to think of. They're like opposed to the idea of men having sex with each other, with queer sex, or with elderly people having sex. And the reason I bring up my experience as someone who worked in a clinical setting and who tested community members for STIs and HIV is those are both extremely natural things, of course, but especially the elderly thing. I think, and what I learned working in that setting, is that people see elderly people having sex as a really weird taboo thing. And I'm like, they don't stop being people after a certain age. As a matter of fact, because it's so stigmatized, because they are not given the resources and they are not being spoken to about safer sex practices. For a while there, I don't know what the number is now because I haven't done that work in a while, but for a while, STI rates in, quote, old folks' homes or like retirement communities were really, really high because people think, oh, old people don't have sex. So they weren't giving them the resources that they needed. They weren't encouraging them to have the conversations with each other about what their options were about practicing safer sex. And so because of that, it's basically like teaching teenagers abstinence only. That doesn't work. It's never worked. I don't, like, sorry if you disagree, but I'm not sorry, because that just doesn't work. It's doing the same thing to these older people, and you're just kind of like letting them out there to dry or to fend for themselves without giving them their proper tools or resources. So I thought that was a very interesting point of conversation that this brought up for me, at least. And of course, all of these links are going to be in the Susto Google Docs on patreon.com/sustopodcast. The next link that I have here is from a website called steamit.com/cryptid. This is the Basilisco, Chilote, Colo Colo, and Cockatrice by, I'm assuming the writer is New Age Myanmar. This was posted 6 years ago. This entry says, to kill Basilisco Chilote, you must burn the egg as soon as it is laid and kill the chicken that laid it to prevent further eggs from being laid, that poor chicken or rooster. Because again, the egg, I guess, would be laid by an animal that typically wouldn't lay an egg. So the elderly hen or the male rooster. So if someone saw that happening, they'd be like, that animal is making Basilisco Chilotes. We need to kill it and, you know, get rid of the eggs. But this says that once hatched, the only way to destroy it is by burning down the house where it lives. So I don't know if it forms some sort of like supernatural bond with the house that it lives under, or maybe it's just because because it's like, no, you need to burn the whole house so you can burn it in there as well. But I'm just going to say now, I do not endorse arson. I don't think arson is the answer. I'm not telling you all to commit arson. That's just what this entry says. That's what this belief is. And again, it just reiterates that this myth is based upon myths of the Colo-Colo and the basilisk, but borrows from the tradition of the cockatrice, which itself draws from the basilisk. The next link that I have is from ztevens.wordpress.com. It's just talking about supernatural beings in Chilote mythology of Chile. It's talking about mythology of the Chiloé archipelago, which again, we know includes El Trauco and now the Basilisco Chilote. This one reiterates the idea that it dehydrates people and it makes their skin like shrivel up and it makes them look really chupado is the only word that I can think of, but like dehydrated. This one does mention about looking at it though and says at all costs, one must avoid looking into the eyes of the basilisco as its gaze turns humans to stone. This is the only entry that I found that said that. The other two had not said that before about the Basilisco Chilote. It says it is best not to let Basilisco Chilote hatch, but to kill one, the egg must be burned immediately again, and the chicken that laid it as well. And once more, just reiterating that if it's already hatched and it has victims, the only way to get rid of it is to burn the house down. And then the last link that I have here is a wiki entry about the machi or the shamans from the Mapuche people, because it was mentioned that in certain cases, they're the only people who can get rid of the Basilisco Chilote. And this wiki entry says a machi is a traditional healer and religious leader in the Mapuche culture of Chile and Argentina. Machis play significant roles in a Mapuche religion. In contemporary Mapuche culture, women are more commonly machis than men, but it is not a rule. Male machi are known as machiweye. This description here says the Mapuche live in southern South America, mostly in central Chile and the adjacent areas of Argentina. As a religious authority within Mapuche culture, a machi leads healing ceremonies called machitun. During the machitun, the machi communicates with the spirit world. Machis also serve as advisors and oracles for their community. In the past, they advised on peace and warfare. The term machi is sometimes interchangeable with the word calcu, and calcu usually has an evil connotation, whereas machi is usually considered good. So it's one of those things where, I hope I don't embarrass myself and get this wrong, but all rectangles are squares, but not all squares are rectangles, right? Like all calcu are machi, but not all machi are calcu or can be. I probably just fucked that up, but I will just say, I'll reiterate again, machi can be interchangeable with the word calcu, but calcu is reserved for it, like an evil connotation. So if it's someone who only does bad, then they can only be called a calcu, but a machi can be called machi or calcu. Got it. This is not always the case, however, as the terms may be interchangeable in common use. To become a machi, a Mapuche person has to demonstrate character, willpower, and courage because initiation is long and painful. A person is usually selected in infancy based upon the following. And there's a bulleted list here that says premissionary dreams, supernatural revelations, influence of the family, inheritance, their power of healing disease, and their own initiative. Machi Luwun is the ceremony to consecrate a new machi. The chosen child will live 6 months with a dedicated machi where they learn the skills to serve as a machi. So they take on this apprenticeship as a child. This goes on to talk about their role in Mapuche medicine, how gender roles and discrimination play into being a machi. Those are all the links that I have for today's story. Stick around for another one of those reports. You all seemed to really enjoy that last time. So we'll be right back with the news. Welcome back to the Susto Paranormal Report with SBKY News, where I delve into the mysterious and the supernatural from around the globe. Join me as I explore eerie encounters, haunted locales, and chilling phenomena, bringing you tales that will send shivers down your spine. In our first report from mirror.co.uk by Niamh Kirk, a TikTok user shares eerie footage showing a possible ghost removing a dog's collar in her home. Two dogs in separate crates are barking at each other until suddenly falling silent around the 25-second mark into the video. One dog's collar spontaneously falls off, causing it to whimper and rear back in fear. The video garners over 1 million likes and thousands of comments, with many viewers convinced it's evidence of a ghost. Some skeptics suggest the collar got caught on the crate's bars, causing it to come loose, while others attribute it to a tight collar snapping off. Debates arise over the credibility of the video, with some questioning the plausibility of the collar getting caught given the dog's position within the crate. Up next, from Fox 13 Salt Lake City by Spencer Joseph, a recently declassified document from the All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, part of the U.S. Department of Defense, mentions unidentified anomalous phenomena in Utah. The document details an investigation into alleged paranormal activity at a property in Utah formerly owned by the head of a private sector organization. Reports cited shadow figures, creatures, and anomalies in human consciousness at the location. Investigators planned to hire psychics to study interdimensional phenomena believed to frequent the area. Despite an extensive investigation, the final report spanning about 70 pages found nothing of note, though hundreds of anomalies were investigated nationwide. While no confirmed evidence was found, the report acknowledges that some phenomena remain unexplained. From FIS.org, the Archives of the Unexplained, or AFU, in Norrköping, Sweden, houses a vast collection of paranormal phenomena documentation, including newspaper clippings, books, and first-hand accounts. Founded over 50 years ago, the AFU boasts 4.2 kilometers, or 2.6 miles, of shelves underground and is claimed to be the world's largest library of its kind. Run by Klaas Vaughn and Anders Liljegren, the AFU serves as a resource for researchers and the curious alike, aiming to collect and share knowledge on unsolved scientific mysteries. The archive, which receives around 300 visits annually by appointment, is in the process of digitalization, allowing broader access to its contents. Greg Ehegan, a history and bioethics professor at Pennsylvania State University, praises the AFU as the most comprehensive archive for UFO-related materials globally. The study of UFOs, once stigmatized, is gaining acceptance as a field of scientific research, with NASA officially joining the search for UFOs in 2023. The AFU archives contain surprising materials, including notes by Victor Hugo describing encounters with his deceased daughter, which contributed to the birth of Caudaism in Vietnam. The AFU's mission extends beyond documentation to encourage open-minded investigation into paranormal phenomena, challenging societal stigmas, and promoting understanding and exploration. From the shadows and mysteries of the night, this concludes our spine-tingling journey into the unknown. Stay wary, stay curious, and until next time, may the darkness hold no secrets. Welcome back, Wolf Friends. Thank you once more for listening. As always, if you have your own scary stories that you would like me to share on a Letters from the Beyond episode or on social media, because it can also be a video, photo, audio recording, whatever you have that you think is spooky and that I should share, you can send that to my email. That's sustopodcast@gmail.com. You can leave it in a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. You can leave it in the Q&A section of Spotify, which I am, again, reading those. Thank you all for your feedback on the spooky news report. I'm glad to hear that you all enjoyed that. And of course, that's why I did it again. And I'm going to try and continue doing it. And you can also send in your stories by hitting the contact button on sustopodcast.com. Once more, like I said in the beginning of the episode, please make sure to visit vote.austinchronicle.com and vote for Susto in the podcast category. So again, go to the website, scroll down to politics and media, scroll down to podcast, and type in Susto to nominate me. This is the first round, so thank you so much in advance for your nomination. I truly appreciate it. I will see you at the Psychic and Spirit Fest next month in May 17th and 18th. And if you are feeling extra generous, I would greatly, greatly, greatly appreciate it if you helped me in raising funds to invest in new equipment for Susto. You can visit gofund.me/10bcdc27. And as always, the easiest way to support the show is by interacting with it, liking, subscribing, rating, review, sharing it with your ghoul friends, and follow along on @SustoPodcast on every social media platform for any and all updates on the show. Thank you, thank you, thank you for all of your support. 5 years is coming up so fast. I can't believe it, but also, yes, I can. With all of that being said, a final and huge thank you to this episode's patrons. You can sign up by visiting patreon.com/SustoPodcast, and this episode's patrons are Liza, Sadie, Rachel, Alejandra, Luther, April, Mario, Eva, Dee, Victoria, Josette, Angela and Co., Mandy, Jules, Lori, Jeannie, Desiree C., Anna C., Ashes, Neresa, Rachel, Asukena, Rios, Anna, Marlene, Chata, Lainey, Desiree A., Aaliyah, Holly, Cynthia, and Carla. Thank you all so much once again. If you're interested in becoming a patron, you can visit patreon.com/sisterpodcast. Thank you for listening today. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I will talk to you in the next one. And until then, why did the chicken cross the road?
Because.
Bye.